Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Straight Talk with Ted Santos and Blair Nash. And here we are on another Sunday, ready to have a provocative, entertaining, and educational conversation about relationships. This is the show made for men, by men. But ladies, you wouldn't want to miss it. I'm Ted Santos. I'm always flying with my co-pilot, Blair Nash. Blair, let them know you're in the house.
Good evening, everybody. Hope all is well, and thank you very much for tuning in to Straight Talk.
Great, great. So just before we jump into this, and I really would like to jump into it because I think this is going to be a big one. You had something happening over the weekend or recently. What were you doing?
You said I had something happen over the weekend?
You did something, right? You said you were engaged in something.
Yeah, I did. So I had a sex change over the weekend. Ted. No, I'm kidding. Everybody.
we were talking about that a couple weeks ago.
Don't spit any wine across the room or anything, everybody. No. No, I'm kidding. No, I actually had a wine social day party yesterday evening. It was very, very well attended. I'll be posting pictures either sometime tomorrow or at the very latest on Monday, when I get all the pictures taken. There's probably over 100 photos to go through and everything, and you know, just going to kind of pick the best, you know, the best of the best. So, but yeah, I had a wine social from 4 to 9 yesterday here, and it was great. Had a ton of food, had food left over, ton of wine. You know, my co-host Manda. She had, I don't know how many bottles. I mean, she sold literally dozens of bottles of wine. So just to show you how much, people came out. They showed out more than I thought they would. I mean, as far as the attendance, as far as the participation and the fact that, you know, I mean, because everything at the event was free as far as, like, what we were providing. And the only thing that, you know, if people wanted to buy anything would be the, of course, my books were for sale. But the only thing that was available for purchase was the wine that Wanda was out, you know, that she was selling or whatever. So, and that was just kind of like, if you were interested, it had nothing to do with anything. You could still eat all the food you wanted, drink all the wine you wanted and whatever. So it was, you know, it was great. I was really, really happy to see my sister, you know, sold out of all of her inventory, literally. So,
great time.
I, you know, like I said, I was exhausted from yesterday. So for those of you who went out and, you know, came out, I want to thank you so much. I'll be posting some stuff about that here shortly anyway. But yeah, that was it. It was a great time. And that was it. We had a really, really great time. And I appreciate everyone that came out to support me and show me love and got a chance to have some old friends, meet new friends, and, you know, meet a few friends that I have on social media. So, yeah, it was great. It was awesome.
So you met some people you knew from social media, people you had never met before, but they were connected
You have people who you see on social media like every day or every other day, and you conversate with them and, you know, converse, because it's not conversate, right? Okay, so rewind on that. So it's converse with them. And, you know, it's not a scripted show, Ted, so, you know, we make mistakes sometimes. But, you get a chance to talk with them on social media, and, you know, there's people I've known for literally 3, 4, 5 years, and we live in the same city. And I always tell people, why is it that you can live 15 minutes from a person, known them for years, and you've never, talked with them literally every other day. They comment on your stuff. You see their kids grow up. You know, they see you when you graduate, and when you get new cars and take trips and everything. They're a part of your extended family. You know, for those of us who always say, well, social media is not real life, I don't know who the hell you're dealing with, because it really is. If their parent, you know, if someone says to you, you know, my, you know, something happened to my, you know, such and such, or if you say me and my, you know, my boyfriend split up or what have you, you feel that. So it's more than just, you know, people that you talk to on the internet. You're, you know, it's kind of an extended community. So for me to be able to just kind of talk with folks and have them come out and, you know, just pour into me and me pour into them, I mean, it was just, it felt great, man. It was just good to see, you know, my people come through and, you know, like I said, just, you know, have smiles on their faces and, you know, again, meet other people and, you know, like, oh, I'm, you know, okay, yeah, you know, my, you know, one of my best friends from growing up, she came out and, you know, a few of my dudes came out and everything. So it was great, man. It really was. Really was.
Very cool. Yeah, it's interesting that you can know someone on social media. It doesn't matter if it's a few months or a few years. When you finally meet them, there's a sense like you've known them for all your life, like you've had interaction with them all your life, personal face-to-face interaction. So,
very absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you have these. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You have this what?
No, I was just saying you just have this. It's just like, to me, I don't look at the people who I know on social media as like, oh, that's just, you know, that's not real life. I look at them as part of my extended community. No, we didn't go to school together. You know, no, we may not have went to college together. But the fact that, you know them, you know intimate, vivid details, you know what they're, you know what kind of car they have, you know where they work, you know what their kids look like, you know their beliefs or philosophies, you know. And again, especially if you live in the same city, see some of the same things happening, you know, whether your city is going up, whether it's going down, you know, you're able to kind of take that and listen to it, you're able to take that and see it and kind of say to yourself, you know what, we have a lot of the same experiences. And, you know, I don't take it for granted. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have this event, was to, you know, just kind of really show support and give back to the people who have supported me. I mean, I've been doing this now for 6 years. When I first started my blog and my radio show back in 2013, it was 2013 actually, May of 2013, so I'm coming up on 6 years doing this. And I wanted to just, you know, have folks come out and enjoy an evening, you know, where you get dressed up, you know, not no jeans or nothing, just jeans and sneakers, but get dressed up, you know, wipe off nice and come and enjoy some great, I mean, the DJ was phenomenal, the food was great, you know, it was just an overall good experience. But, I mean, the area where it was hosted at is a kind of a thriving area that's in Columbus called Grandview Heights, which is, I think someone told me, it's one of those areas that's like the top 2% of the city of wealth earners live in this area. So, and they're growing it, and they're doing like those multiplexes where they have like a, you know, Planet Fitness and, you know, the new hotels and everything. So I wanted people to come over and just kind of see a different side of the city. And most of the people had never, you know, they're like, I've never seen this area before. And I'm like, yeah, that's wow. That's why I wanted people to come out and check it out, because, you know, I live on the east side, and most people come, you know, for example, those of you who live in Atlanta, you have an area called Atlantic Station where a lot of people, you know, go to, and it's, you know, everything. It's eating places, it's places to shop, et cetera. Well, Columbus has several of those, you know, and this is one of those areas that's kind of becoming that, you know, that's slowly kind of coming that. So I just wanted people to kind of come out to a different area, you know, experience something different and, you know, do it and not have to worry about, you know, is it going to cost for cover, is it going to cost for wine, et cetera. So, you know, have my people out, you know, who love me and I love them, and just let them, you know, drink as much as they could and eat as much as they could, listen to a great DJ, you know, dance. People started, you know, as it got later in the evening, people started getting wild with it, man, with the hoochie dances and stuff. So, yeah, it was great. It was good. Like I said, just meeting new people, and, you know, having folks come out and just, you know, kind of bond and connect. It was awesome, man. It was awesome.
Good. And I was saying that, you know, it's you can see how people just know one another online, let's say Facebook, and they meet in person, how it's so easy mm-hmm. for a relationship to spark because the internet, you can use it as a way of still expressing yourself. Like you said, you get to see where a person works, their children, and all that. So you can see how relationships can start online, which is a perfect segue for why we're here tonight to talk about relationships. And in fact, the internet has made the world much smaller. So before, if you lived in one country, you had to either use snail mail or go to that country to meet someone there. So now you have all these websites of women from other countries. So people, or I shouldn't say women, just men and women, you can literally meet someone halfway around the world and still get to know them. And with technology, video conference that you can do for free, whether it's Facebook or other things, you can actually see the person. So technology has made the world smaller, and it's perfect for what we're discussing tonight when we ask the question, do men have to go abroad? You know, is it easier for men to find love overseas? And with so much access to people overseas and efficient ways, and just for the record, for everyone, when I say find love overseas, yes, you can fly overseas, you can live abroad, you can just travel to meet someone abroad, you can use the internet, you have, mail order brides, and you could also meet someone here in the U.S. who was born and raised in another country, and they still have retained, you know, their language and their cultures and the other values that came with their country. So essentially, there is a growing number of men who are going abroad, whether physically growing, using the internet, or meeting someone. There are men importing love. Is what they're doing. They're getting love from somewhere else. If you buy a Mercedes, that's an import. That's a car from another country. And so men are meeting, falling in love, and marrying women from other countries. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely. Let me say a couple things real quick. First of all, the call-in number for the show is 323-642-1387. Again, it's 323-642-1387. We have several callers already on hold, and what I would just ask of you is to just be patient. I promise you, as we do every week, we are going to get to you. I see all my calls, so, you know, just if you can, just hold tight, and we are going to let you, you know, allow you to speak whatever you want to say. So just if you could, be patient. But let me just say this real quick, and then we'll jump to our first call. So I have a number of conversations with men about this, about the whole idea of men kind of dating outside the U.S. And, you know, there's a number of reasons why I think men kind of turn to that. You know, I don't think there's really a lack of women here in the U.S. I don't think that's it. But I think what happens, and we'll get into it a little bit more as we take our calls, is that men kind of are looking at the way that things are set up here in the Western Hemisphere, as far as the laws, as far as the mindsets, et cetera, I think men have just kind of started to say to themselves, you know what, do I really want to deal with, you know, an individual who can say what they want, do what they want, you know, take my resources, you know, be as disrespectful as they want to, and yet turn around, and if I decide and say, you know what, enough is enough, I've had it. And then she's like, oh, but I'm going to get paid for you leaving. Does that sound like a recipe for a happy relationship? So I think what's happened is men are kind of utilizing their options and saying, you know what, you know, since it seems like a lot of our women here have adopted the mindset of Western civilization, let me go and get with, you know, an individual who's in another country. I think there is something to be said for that. You know, I like to use a lot of sports analogies, and I'll say this. If you know anything about Greg Popovich, who's the coach for the Spurs, most of the talent that he gets is not from the U.S. Now the fact that he is a five-time NBA champion, you have to look at that and say, is there something that they are teaching outside this country that maybe we need to start to adopt? So that's something I just want everyone to think about. And on that note, we're going to just get to our callers. So did you have any other questions before we got rolling, Ted?
Let's take some calls.
Okay, cool. All right, first call we're going to is area code 415. 415, you're live and on the air.
Hello. Hi, this is Janelle from San Francisco. And
hi, Janelle.
Yeah, so this is my second time listening to the program, and I really enjoyed last week, so I'm excited to learn about what gets said this week. And the allure of the topic is that, you know, I've spent time abroad working on my love life there, and agree with, you know, what was said so far, that, you know, the culture and mentality of some folks in the U.S. Can be frustrating. But at the same time, you know, abroad, the people from other countries really look up to the United States and the culture here. And I typically find myself learning a lot about the United States by living abroad, because there's so much emphasis on what the United States is doing. And so when people from abroad move to the United States, my concern is always that they want to westernize. And so if anything, you know, dating someone from another country to keep that authentic, whatever culture it is that someone the United States finds appealing, is to maybe move there or spend, you know, half the year in another country so that you know, the draw to the culture abroad doesn't get, you know, watered down by spending all your time in this country. I know that's just like a personal experience, but maybe not necessarily accurate.
Okay.
Or applicable to everyone.
So
yeah.
Let's keep Janelle on hold, and let's see if we have another guy. Do we have someone calling from Chicago, 312 or 847?
Let
number?
Me see. Give me a second. I do have a 312 here. I'll skip to that one. We have a area code 312. 312, you are live and on the air.
Hello.
Hey.
Can you hear us?
We can. Hi, Teddy. Jerry. How are you? Yes.
How you doing? Chicago coming in.
All right,
Chicago.
All right.
I
hear that you guys are having some inclement weather right now. Is that true?
No. We had record-breaking snow yesterday, and we just came from outside the park. It's good weather. You know, it's just a strange thing that happened with April.
Wow.
So we out here enjoying the good sunshine today with my beautiful Mexican honey.
So Jerry, I want Jerry to actually have a conversation with us. So first, Jerry, give a little background. So, you know, you're a professional. Tell them what you've done, what you're doing now, and then talk about your relationships, and then we'll get to where you are right now.
Wow, where did I start? I was a journalist for about 20 years, you know, located in New York, Boston, ended up in Chicago second time. And after I left the business, I started a PR firm, and we worked with major politicians from Reverend Jesse Jackson to we were on the campaign for Obama for president. We on mayoral races here in Chicago. We worked with college presidents around the nation. Famous athletes. We do the whole shebang, entertainers in L.A. That's kind of what we do.
Jerry, just so they know, which papers were you a journalist? You wrote as a reporter for which papers?
USA Today, Boston Globe, Chicago Tribune. I'm originally from Jersey, so I made my way back to Jersey, and I worked with the Star Ledger there. And I worked with USA Today when it first launched.
Major papers. And for the record, when Jesse Jackson used to be all over the news, you were his press secretary. You were the guy driving him in the media. Is that a fair thing to say?
Right. Basically, our job is to get him in the CNN, MSNBC, ABC, Good Morning America. We could be in four cities in one day with the Reverend, travel the whole world, never know where you're going to go. Have no idea. The man was, they call him Jesse Jet Center because he traveled a lot.
So now let's get to what our show is about. So you've been married. Is that you've also been married?
Well, yeah, I think I was married for 23 years to an African-American woman, a woman I met when I was in Washington, went undergrad at Howard University. So, you know, hey, that's why you go to D.C., right?
Right.
Beautiful people, beautiful university, and fortunate to meet, never forget, went to a nice nightclub on Valentine's night and met a beautiful lady and ended up being married, having five kids, and 23 years later, the roof blew off or the floor fell from under me, whatever you want to call it, right? So those things happen. And, you know, I think you go about in life saying, hey, will you ever fall in love again? I mean, will you ever meet the right woman? And I wasn't sure I'd ever even love again, to be honest with you. And I traveled, you know, around quite a bit. I mean, Germany, England, you know, France, Central America, Caribbean. Kept offices in the Caribbean and in Florida and different places. And you know, eventually I decided I wanted to do something different. And got involved in some salsa dancing and started meeting people of the Hispanic persuasion. And one day I just decided, you know, I want to just go away from the traditional spots where you just meet Americans and you're dancing, a few Hispanic people coming. I just wanted to go into the depths of Mexico and Chicago. Over the last 20 years, probably 800,000 Mexicans have moved into Chicago. And there are some enclaves in Chicago where they speak no English, none whatsoever, and there's probably pockets you would never go into. So I was just following south of Chicago one day and went to Chicago.
Jerry, just a quick timeout. There's some background noise there, and it's probably making it hard for people to hear you. So,
that might have been making time tag. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. If you can go on mute, Blair. But Jerry, keep going.
Right. So I was saying there are pockets of Chicago where, it's all Mexico. It's like Mexico. It is nothing happening there. English. Everything is English. They speak in English. They talk in English. They eat in English. And I wanted to just go into the depths of Mexico. Just wanted to go into the depths of the Latin culture because I was really fascinated about salsa. It wasn't trying to find a woman. It was trying to just learn how to enhance the dance, and I wanted to learn the language.
Right.
But after going there a few Fridays, one day this woman walked in there, and I said, man, I would really like to meet that woman. You know, I'm a journalist. So I was saying one day, I would like to know the story behind this woman. That's the way I approached this. And I said, I want to find the story behind it. But let me go a step further, though, Ted. I want to say that I'm a man of some religious convictions. So, I mean, I'm not perfect, but I knew after I went through a traumatic divorce, and I knew having five kids from that and how that disrupted the family, especially when we were at the top of our game economically and goal-oriented and the bottom fell down, I was saying, if God ever blessed me where I can meet the woman of my dreams, cherish this woman. I would honor this woman. I would love her the way the Bible says a man should love a woman and the way a man should find a wife. I was sincere about this. I didn't know who this woman was going to be now. I wasn't looking for someone Latin. I was just looking for the right woman. So I was in this club one night, and these are not like clubs, like hardcore clubs. These are places where people take classes for about an hour. They're nice restaurants. You can drink in there, but most of these people are not even heavy drinkers. They are people who love music. They love dancing. So I was there one night. This lady came in. She was new. I had never seen her in the spot. And I just kind of caught her smile. I said, wow. And I look at women. and when they dance, to see, okay, are they classy? Are they always up on guys? How do they dance when they're with a guy? So I noticed this woman for a few weeks, and I just say, man, she's classy, always got a $1 million smile on her face. So one day I went to approach her. So I went to the table to meet her, and I asked her, you know, nicely, hey, you know, what's your name? She said something, and I said, you know, I didn't understand. You can repeat it. And she was kind of really conceited and said, you know, my name is too long for me to repeat. It'll be too hard for you. And she kind of, like, bounced me off, right? So, you know, I just stepped away politely. Then about 2 or 3 weeks later, I had another opportunity to get to the table with her, and I asked again, what's her name? And she shared what her name was. And I reminded her that when I asked her the first time, she would not say her name. And she said, you know, she couldn't recall that, and she said she's not that type of person. So we had a nice conversation, and we talked a little bit, and that was it. The next time I saw her, we end up, we're at different times at different tables. But meanwhile, when you're in class, you change partners. So you dance with a person, you do a routine with them, you get the next person. So we started to talk a little friendly, and we got to a table where we're at the same table, and we actually had a nice conversation. And the conversation was about, hey, you know, what kind of business you in, what you do. She was asking me what I'm into, and she shared what she was doing. And I said, hey, you know, I would really like an opportunity to understand more about your business and see if there's a way we can partner. I can do some things because at the same time, I was interested in building a Hispanic arm of my company. So that led to about 2 months later where eventually we had an opportunity to have that meeting. It was a nice meeting. She couldn't make the lunch meeting, so I was trying to do a lunch meeting. But she said, I can make it in the evening about 6 o'clock. Beautiful meeting, beautiful lady. Once she was at the table with me, I said to myself, this has got to be the woman that God has brought for me. I've got to go after this woman strongly. It was just that strong for me. So it's from there, it's all patience, all history, taking my time, not rushing anything. I wasn't rushing to get a kiss off of her. I wasn't rushing to get into the bed. All I wanted to do was to get to know this woman. And the time that we took to get to know each other, I just think it was very beautiful. So that's my story. So when you look at it, what, 18 months later, here we are. We're together. We're living together. Have plans for bigger things in life. But, you know,
so
you take it a step
Jerry,
at a time.
Jerry, I'm going to ask you. So this is the first time you've – and so her name is – should we say her name or not? We'll just say – The woman you're seeing now. She's here. Okay.
She's here. And she's
right,
going
perfect.
To speak her mind. I mean, that's what I like
all
about
right.
it. She doesn't hold back anything.
Wait. 1 second, Jerry. So in the past, so you married a woman who was born and raised in the U.S., right? And the women you have dated traditionally have always been from the U.S., correct?
Well, the women I've dated mostly have been in the U.S. until then. I met a woman from the Caribbean. I met women
from
India. I met women from Romania. The whole gamut. I think when you dance and you get out there, they're from every part of the world, so you get to meet different people. So, you know, I met different people, but I haven't met anybody like this one. I'm gonna be honest with you. This was not something I had planned. It wasn't something I expected because there's some uniqueness to this relationship.
I want to ask you a very specific question. So, I was asking you primarily your relationships in the past have been with women who were born and raised in the U.S. First and only language is English, primarily, correct?
Until later on, Ted. Yeah, in the beginning,
so
I'll say for three fourths of my life, it changed.
Okay, and it started to change. So you did start to date women who were from other countries. So, what are the two biggest differences that you see dating a woman who's been born and raised in Mexico? And as you said, she's in what people would consider to be independent. She has her own business. It's doing well. And like you said, she speaks her mind, except there's something, you've been married already for over 20 years, you've raised a family with the woman, but there's something that's happening in this relationship, and that's what I'd like you to talk about, that is different from what you've seen in the past. What is that?
Well, let me
just say this real quick. We got about three other calls on hold. I do want to hear what he has to say because that is very, very intriguing. But I just want to let you know we actually have three other calls on hold that have been on hold for over 10 minutes. So, but go right ahead, Jerry.
Let Jerry finish.
Absolutely.
Well, basically, this is what I would share, Ted, is that I never thought I would ever date outside the African-American community. It wasn't even a thought. I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, went to Howard University undergrad. It was never my thought I would date outside my race. I wasn't prejudiced, but I just never thought of it. But eventually, after going through a traumatic divorce and recognizing that I was, maybe it's just how I was jaded, I was thinking that are most women like this, or will most black women be the way my past wife was, where, you know, you build a good life, and then it's just an expectation, I think, of what I saw around the women, the professional women, the women who, you know, who wanted to achieve with their man. I just say, you know, I think I want something different. I wanted different values. And I think, and it wasn't like she had bad values, but I didn't want to go that direction. I wanted something different. I wanted something where it was really family values first, not looking at all the materialism things, just family values, family structure. That was something I was looking for. And I kind of remember when I went to school in Newark, even though I wasn't Catholic, I went to a predominantly Catholic school, and I always used to say, man, I really wish I could meet one of them nice Catholic girls, right, the way they were perceived to be. So that's kind of what I looked at,
right, what I wanted.
So when I got older, I was kind of saying, what are those girls like when they're women? And that's kind of what I looked at. And most of these Mexican women, they come from a Catholic background. Now, that's stereotyping, but that's what I was looking for, that kind of value. So it's a difference that I wanted, and that's it, something totally different, and it is different. Now, there's some similarities. There's some things that are over the top different than African-American women, but it is definitely different. But, you know, I was open for this ride, open for this journey, and there's no turning back at this point.
Right, and so you're saying family, having a stronger family value, and less materialism. And this, let me say, Jerry, I lived in Mexico for about 2 years, and that is, it's not just Mexico, Latin America. The value that's put on family and how they work together is enormous. Even just friends and family, and Mexico may be one of the strongest of Latin America because the philosophy is more like blood is thicker than water, and if you're not Mexican, you're not blood. You don't even have to be related. So there is a stronger family values that you see in Mexico than you see here. And it's, you know, you can research it online, you can read about it, but you really don't fully appreciate it until you're part of it and you're living in it, you're immersed in it.
I'd like to hear other people talk, and we'll be on for a little bit. But I went textbook on this. I read about when I met her, I said, I want to get this right. And I really studied. And I tell you, everything I read in these studies about Mexican women, she's like right out of the textbook. There has been no surprise with it. I'll leave it right there.
All right, perfect. All right, so hold right there, Jerry.
All right, cool. Thank you for your comments, Jerry. We are now going to go to another area code 347. 347, you're live on the air.
Hi, good day. It's Dawn from Brooklyn.
Hey, Dawn, how are you?
I'm good. Always good when I hear this show.
Great, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
I'm listening to Jerry, and I understand his point of view, but unfortunately, he's isolating one woman that he had a long-term relationship with, as that's the only way black women are. So that kind of cuts off a lot of things that I don't quite understand, because even myself as a woman, I married a man, African-American man, the relationship fell, and then turned around and married a Portuguese man.
Okay.
And the relationship is different.
Ted, can I drive for a second on this one?
Sure.
Okay, all right, cool. So you said, give me your name again, sweetheart. I'm so sorry.
Dawn from Brooklyn.
Dawn, okay. Dawn, let me ask you just a few questions, and maybe you can kind of, you know, give me some insight. So, you know, I'm a statistics guy, and anybody who knows who, you know, follows me and knows what I do knows I'm about that. I'm about statistics. So let me ask you a couple simple questions, and maybe you can kind of give some light to the conversation. Black women currently are the least married of all races. Why do you think that is?
That is true.
Okay, why do you think that?
Those types of values, unfortunately, got lost due to the fact that we ourselves, and I'm going to say it openly, bash our black males because we have been told to follow our black males, back them up, do all we can for them, and then unfortunately our black males turn on us.
Okay. All right.
So those values are not always expressed.
Okay. And I'm not saying I agree or disagree. I'm just trying to give some conjecture to the conversation. So my next question is, you mentioned black males, and you know, black women typically, a lot of women bash black males, and I have heard that before. So my next question is, if black women are such a commodity or seen such a commodity, why do other races not marry them as well?
Black women are actually very sought after.
Yes, black women.
Black women are very sought after.
Okay.
They're sought after. If you're a good black woman, a solid woman, and I don't care about color, someone has to put some effort towards getting you. And it shouldn't just be, okay, we had some drinks and we hung out and I'm going to hook up tonight and I'm going to go home. The average one doesn't do that, but if you keep in your little box, in a small box, that's what you're going to get. I'm a woman with a degree.
So,
I'm a woman with a background, a little different.
Okay, all right, cool. So let me ask you this. So in our society, here's the way that they're, you know, I'm sure you've heard of Chris Rock. He has a new comedy special, and I'm going somewhere with this, so just roll with me for a second. He has a new comedy special out, and he basically says that, and I'm paraphrasing with this, that men are the only creatures on the planet, not children, not women, not animals. Men are the only creatures on the planet where we find some sort of value in them as long as they provide something. And I couldn't agree with that more. Men are not, if you're not providing, if you're not doing something to provide and procure resources, you might as well just go sit down somewhere, have all the seats, right? I agree with that. The flip side of it is that we live in a society, not Blair Nash's belief, not Ted Santos' belief, but we live in a society that says a woman is only value, well, I don't say only value, but the highest value that a person can give a woman is to marry her, protect, and provide for her. I agree with that also. So when you say the whole idea of, well, you know, women are, you know, women, you know, have, you know, they have a belief that they, you know, I was trying to kind of make sense of how that connected to, you know, women not being married. Because I think that what men are saying, this is the reason why we're having this conversation, is that specifically, black women have lost, in many men's eyes, have lost value over the decades, over the generations, because of a number of things that we'll get to some other time and maybe in this conversation. But the idea that black women are not, that might be sought after to date, they might be sought after to, you know, get, you know, have sex with, but help me to understand why they're not being sought after to marry. Please help me understand that.
Okay, my opinion, and that's just from me as a woman of age, the values that I was taught from my parents and from my mother, and I say my mother because that's the woman I had to mirror, and my aunt, I mirrored what was around me that was positive. and I was told what was negative and what was positive. My mother was a worker. She worked in a high-powered profession. She was a nurse. So life and death was also around her on a regular basis. I work for law enforcement. Life and death is around me on a regular basis. I was told, not taught, told to be a strong woman. I was never told to be a strong black woman. I know how to cook for my husband. I know how to take care of my family. And I don't take it as a negative. A lot of women lost a lot of things because they were not told to be positive and say, oh, you got to be a strong black woman. No, I got to be a strong woman. Because if your eyes were blind, you wouldn't know what color I am. So it's irrelevant. We don't teach our women these things. We're going back to trying to teach them that. As far as marriage, unfortunately, a lot of people don't see marriage as a positive. And
going through divorce myself, I didn't see it as a positive. Let me interject and say that people do see marriage as something that's a positive. When you look at other races, you know, although there has been a slight dip in pretty much all races, I'm not going to dispute that. But when you look at all other races, their men are still marrying their women. My question to you is, we'll use the notion black men don't like to marry black women. I disagree, but let's go there for a second. Why is it that if black women have such value that other races aren't picking up the baton and saying, you know what, I'll marry her? Why is that not happening?
Right, and not that they date black women. Why aren't they marrying them? We're not talking about buying a drink and going home. We're talking about marrying. Why aren't they marrying those women?
They're not putting forward the levels. I put forward, I wanted to be married. I wanted to be part of a family. I'm not going to be a weekend girl. And my husband is Caucasian, and he fought sought after
a
woman who put out what she wanted.
Right, but they're marrying
other
women,
We don't request
Don't request what?
To be married. We don't request to be married. We don't. A lot of us do not request and or require a man to put that type of energy in us, so therefore we don't get that energy back.
Okay, so just from starting in 1904, and from 1904, do you know which race, ethnic group was more likely to be married in the United States?
African American men and women?
Exactly.
Probably not.
You know when that?
Mm-hmm. Or
no, that in 1904, that was the most likely to be married ethnic group in the U.S. was black Americans.
Mm-hmm.
That stopped.
Let me interject real quick and say, you got to it, Sid. I was gonna say it doesn't even have to go back that far, but
I know what I'm saying. So, from 1904 until the early 1960s, that was a consistent pattern. What do you think made it stop? It's not like because this was being passed on generation to generation. You find a wife. You work your butt off, you provide for them, you get your children to a higher level, and then it stopped.
I think a lot of it is because a lot of our black men didn't understand what our black women wanted to get out and actually earn a living, and they were incapable of earning a living. Pride comes into a lot of plays when it comes to being married. A man is taught, this is what you do, you bring this in, you bring that in, and you provide in a certain way. And sometimes with certain men, across the board, if you can't provide, you do not want to see your woman doing better than you, and that makes you feel like you're less than a man, even though that's not what the case is.
Right.
Do you know
what actually did happen
in the 1960s? Do you know what reality, like not a speculation? The government went door-to-door in the black community and offered women a deal. A deal they couldn't refuse. To take the deal, which was a welfare check and all kind of benefits, you had to put the man out. And that's when marriage, that's when the black community started having single mothers.
Now, we had single mothers during wartime, so that wasn't even an option.
I understand. But the most likely, even in the 40s, even in the 50s, It was still from 1904, it ran. That's a long run. And then from 1944 until 1964, that was the longest run of prosperity for blacks in the United States. 1964 mm-hmm. it ends, and that's when you got the welfare offered, the deal being offered. So a lot of things fell apart when that deal was made. And women asked the men to leave because they took the check from the government. Are you aware of that?
So you're telling me that women are under the – so women are the reason why no one wants to marry us at this day and age is because they took a check.
I didn't say – listen to what I said. I just gave you facts.
Mm-hmm.
1904 until the early 60s. From 1944 until 1964 – that was the greatest economic prosperity in the black community. After 1964, it started going down, and it's gone down. The more single-parent homes we have, which are predominantly women, the less economic prosperity that exists in the black community. Those are just the facts. That's not my opinion. That's what, like
okay.
Blair was saying, that's what the numbers said.
Mm-hmm. Well, even now, those have changed.
All right. Changed to what?
Well,
changed to what?
Like I said, you have to be brought into a society and be told. I was raised differently. Maybe I was or maybe I wasn't. I was brought into the concept of your next step is marriage, your next step is a household, your next step is all these things. So that wasn't an issue for me. As far as to be that second or that third.
Okay.
So a check, right. I understand, government-wise and every and so forth.
All right, cool.
That's
Thank you
happens.
So much for your comment.
Yeah.
If you can, just hang on the line. We have a few other calls we want to get to. So, yeah, thank you so much for your call. We're going to go to another area code 347. 347, you are live and you are on the air with Straight Talk.
Good evening, Mr. Nash and Mr. Santos. This is Tina Marie.
Hey.
How are you?
Hi, Tina Marie. How are you?
Yes, Mr. Dawn. How are you?
Hello, hello.
Thanks for calling.
This is very interesting. Good evening, everyone. This is very interesting, Ted. I really like your facts. That you're stating facts. Because as you were saying this, I was looking things up, okay? And it states that interracial marriage, because we're stating that men are not marrying black women, or where men are going outside the country to different races.
Right.
And according to an article that I'm reading here, and it's simply facts.
Tina, let me ask you a question real quick before you get gone. State your source of your article, please.
Okay, this comes from. Give me one.
And the
second.
Reason I do the reason why I ask that is because my neighbor can write an article. It has to be something that actually is backed up with links or changeable.
No, that's fine. Anyone can be an expert. Anyone can say that they're an expert and they're not.
Okay.
This is coming from the PEW Research Center analysis of census data conducted, okay?
Okay. Uh-huh.
And it was done in 2013.
Okay.
Okay, would you consider them being experts?
Yes. I've been able to do things from
according,
them. But,
right. No, let's let her go. I'm let right. her go with the blast.
Go ahead.
Okay. No, I'm just merely, it's a conversation. It's something that are facts, okay,
mm-hmm.
that are being stated. Mr.
Okay.
Ted said that according to the welfare system, you know, the black women took the deal of, and that's why they're not being, you know, they're not married to black men. Now, according to this, and not everyone is correct, you're correct. Anyone can write an article, but these are people that are collecting data, census data.
Well,
so I'm
Tina Marie, can you tell
correct.
Us? Can you, Tina Marie, can you tell us what this article says?
Okay.
What you
it
bringing
says
this up
some
for a reason?
Groups,
so,
okay. it states some racial groups are more likely to intermarry than others. Of the 3.6 million adults who got married in 2013, 58% are Native Americans, 28% of Asians, 19% of blacks, 7% of whites have spouses whose race was different from their own. The overall numbers mask significant gender gaps with some racial groups. Among blacks, men are more likely than women to marry someone of a different race. Fully a quarter of black men who got married in 2013 married someone who was not black. Only 12% of women, of black women, marry outside of their race.
Okay.
So that's the point. That's exactly what we were saying, Tina Marie.
Right.
That's exactly. You just supported what we were saying.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is you can't – this was – and he's saying – Mr. Ted was saying that because black women took a check. According to this, it was a law created called
Hello?
Yeah, she must have dropped off. So
okay, all right, cool. Well, let me just do this real quick. The call-in number is 323-642-1387. Again, 323-642-1387. We're going to go to area code 570-570. You are live on the air with Ricky.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, but
Enrique Mare.
Wherever you are. Okay, now you sound a lot
clearer.
I'm actually running
right now. I don't know if the background is going to interfere too much.
You just
right now, it's cool.
It, so thank you. It's cool now.
Can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Enrique,
stick your name
we
where
can
you're
hear you loud and clear. We can hear you clear. It's perfect. Keep going.
Okay, excellent. I wanted to bring up three items of information. One was a work that was done by an author called Ralph Epperson called The New World Order. There's a section in his writing. Actually, he has two works. One is called The Unseen Hand, but the other one is called The New World Order. But there's a section in The New World Order where it deliberately talks about the plan to destroy the family structure in this nation. The second book or work was written by a guy named Dr. John Coleman, who also wrote the Hierarchy of 300, Conspiratorial Hierarchy of 300. He wrote another book which outlines the development of the Tavistock Institute, which was the engine. It was the engine behind the movement towards the war in World War I and World War II and the Vietnam War. They created the propaganda through the Tavistock Institute, which is a collective. It's not really one institute. It's the best minds of the intelligentsia that work together to basically fulfill objectives that have to do with international, basically what the international bankers want, you know. But they select these people from these different areas. One of the objectives that he talked about in his book was the dismantling of the family and how important that was and how they used the music industry and television media to start to dissociate families. That's the second one. The third one was a book written by a guy named William Cooper. He wrote a book called Behold the Pale Horse, and there's a section in there called Silent Weapons for Quiet War. All three of these things that I just outlined are different documentation that come from three different authors. It's one of many. They're just three of many different authors that talked about the subject on breaking down a family and when this particular thing started to be instituted, which was around a little after World War II. And so the numbers that you guys gave out was pretty interesting as far as the statistics of when black families went down, or families particularly, ours being, you know, because we represent a certain number in this country, you know, how our situation wound up being more significant to us. but there was a work to dismantle families, and as you can see across the board, families are not what they used to be. Unfortunately, because of our background in slavery, we have other issues that we bring along with that as well. But I just wanted to say that those things are major contributing factors that's still going on today in the dismantling of our families. It's the erosion of the moral fiber of the nation, and being that we are the tail end, we follow the whoever the, you know, we haven't been the moral trendsetters in this country. So we're following the whatever Hollywood or entertainment says is the moral structure, and being that we have the economic structure. Yes.
Hey, Enrique, I just want to make sure I'm understanding. You said we're not the moral trendsetters. What exactly? I'm unclear about that statement. What do you mean?
That means that most of us, regardless of what we call ourselves religiously, we follow the what's going on currently in the nation. You know, our values come from the culture that's being presented in the media. So we're not
Not
the dictators of that.
Wait, I get that only to a sense, except at the same time, the leading people, the man most likely to marry a woman was from the black community. And that didn't stop until the 60s. From 1904, black men were more likely to marry than Black men were more likely to marry than any other race in the U.S., any other ethnic group. That started from 1904 when they were more likely than anyone else. So slavery, you have to just throw that out the window, because from 1904, they were more likely to be married than anyone else. That didn't stop until the early 60s. They drove economic prosperity. Say that again?
I was going to say, with the Tavistock Institute, that was developed around 1913, which was just a little bit before World War One. And it if you read about that, breaking down the family,
Enrique, the reason I'm going to stop you is because the topic is men are, of all races, are finding women abroad, and they're still marrying. And they're marrying women with different values. So the men haven't stopped wanting to marry and have a partner. In fact, when you look at the affluent communities, their marriage rates have not dropped at all. They continue to marry. And part of the reason it doesn't matter. Affluent people continue to marry, because they understand the benefit of being married and how a relationship is a team sport. That's why they remain affluent. Some of them don't start affluent when they marry, but they continue to marry. Affluent people have much lower divorces, and it's not about money. We have a guy on the line, Jerry, and he's with his woman he's dating now is from Mexico, and he talks about the values that he wants. That's what has him, and that's what keeps people together, the values,
okay,
not money.
Well,
money doesn't do that.
I gotta say, honestly, that, you know, there has been a decline in successful marriages as a whole, including, we include not just affluent people, but all people, even including affluent people, because a lot of them can afford the divorce. But there is also, the affluent group is a lot more successful than, I would say, those who are more impoverished, but they're still on a decline compared to what they used to be.
No, they're not. Affluent marriages are not dropping. They're not. And their divorce rates are significantly lower than the general population. But see, the question is, why are men choosing to go abroad? Why are they meeting women, either foreign women they're meeting in the U.S., or they're going abroad to meet women? There are groups, huge groups of men from all races from the U.S. who are going abroad to meet women, and they want to marry them. Like, why is that happening?
Let me ask you this. What's the data? Where are you getting that data from?
There
are
groups. Go on to YouTube. On YouTube, I forget the guy's name, but there are go on YouTube, and there are guys who put together groups. They go to Dominican Republic. They go to Brazil. Maybe I have someone on the line who's done it. But there are groups that those numbers are growing more and more. Guys who are going down, they're setting up, they're buying property in DR, they're buying property in Brazil, they're marrying. We have a woman on the line, Janelle, who said if you want to retain, one problem of bringing someone to the U.S., they eventually become acclimated and
start to adopt Western philosophies and beliefs.
Right, exactly. So guys are buying property.
That's exactly my point. Did you go back and see how the moral fiber of this nation has been diminished? Because, like, what I'm talking about is that in this, the reason why they're going outside this nation is because what's being pumped inside the nation. Other third world nations that are not as heavily influenced by this particular culture, they are influenced now, but not as heavily. You know, a lot of them can't afford the lifestyle that we have here, so they, even if they do have some, you know, contact with it like they do in the Caribbean and other places, they still can't, you know, imitate the lifestyle that you have here. And the culture here is so dominant that, you know, the American culture here in America is very, very dominant. In other places, the government structure is different. But what I'm saying is that some of those places still have the old value system. You know, you find that the morality is a lot more intact in those places, whereas opposed to here, it's been a consistent decline.
Well, let me ask you a quick question. Enrique, where do you think the number for primary and secondary school, where do you think the number one education in the world is? What part of the world does it exist in?
What part of the world has the number one education?
Yep. It's not the United States. It used to be a long time ago,
say,
but the United States.
I think the United States is like number 40.
The answer ain't the U.S.
Well, where is it? Where is the number one right now?
I don't exactly know, but I know in places that I've seen in Asia and Russia.
I only want to talk about number one. I don't want to talk about Asia.
I don't know who's the number
one.
Who got the number one spot. I just noticed that.
I'll tell you who it is. It's the Caribbean and places like Jamaica and Trinidad. You call these third world countries, they are well educated. They're better educated than people here. And when I meet these women from Jamaica, you see the difference, a huge difference. And then you add to what you just said about having a different set of values, it creates a very different relationship.
Well, I got to be honest, because I got Jamaican family. There's an increase in decline in the moral fiber in those areas. Trinidad,
no
Jamaica,
question.
Dominican Republic. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no question.
You know, a lot of people are having, you know, multiple marriages. They're having, you know, a birth out of wedlock. You know, it's not. They are more educated because the schools are more stringent when it comes to what they teach, as opposed. And then another book was written by a guy named John Celebrato, who wrote a book called Dumbing Us Down. He points out how the educational system is strategically dumbed down to produce this demoralization, which is an instrument that's used by political and more affluent people to take advantage of the masses. This is strategically done. This is lobbied for.
Right.
I understand that. I understand that. But see, you've got to get that. Okay, think about it. There's two things, and I'm saying this to Enrique and to everyone. So one of the things that I hear when I put this up on Facebook that men are finding love abroad, one of the first things women said is, oh, they made pejorative comments. They're only choosing those women because those women are third world poor and they cater to men. So now let's take a step back. If a woman is saying other women from other countries cater to men, well, let's think about the woman's expectation in the U.S. You have to be a gentleman. You open doors for me. You take me to dinner. You prove that you have the financial wherewithal, you know, for marriage. You buy me a ring. You buy me gifts. You take me places. And all these things happen at a man's expense. For the first date, if a man doesn't pay and cater to a woman, she doesn't want to go out with him again. So the women in the U.S. seem to have a problem
with women. Ted, hold on. Whoever it is, I don't know if it's Enrique, but you got to pull out that noise in the background, please.
Yeah, you have wind. You're driving. We can hear it. Can you put it on mute?
Okay.
Put your phone on mute, Enrique. So,
okay, yeah, I'm driving at the same time.
Yeah,
okay.
Put your phone on
Thanks.
Mute. So,
thank you.
So
thank
women
you very
in
much,
the U- women in the U.S. have a problem with women catering to men, yet they don't have a problem with demanding that men cater to you. Like, we had the woman on the phone just now called Tiffany, Dawn, who said men have to put in effort. The mentality in the U.S. is that the woman is the prize and that she can kind of sit back and the man is to cater to her. And if a woman in another country wants to cater to a man, they look down on her. So I'm not sure how you come up with that. Here's the second thing. Everyone on the planet, Enrique, we can still hear you driving. We can still hear you.
Yeah, can
man.
You hear me?
Can you put your, yeah, put your phone on mute.
Okay, all right. Let me see if I'm
perfect.
I want to say something to address that, too. So just
I'm
going to put it on mute, but I definitely
all right, go ahead.
Got something.
Let me say the second thing before I lose it. Sure, the second thing is everyone is the CEO of their life. And yeah, that means you're a CEO. A human being is an entity. You're the CEO of your own entity. So an organization is also an entity. And if you're the CEO of an organization and people stop coming to your organization for the service you provide, you can't be mad at the customers and call them names and then put down your competition because your competition is catering to the customer. Instead of being upset with your customers not coming to you, find out why they're no longer coming to you. Because a relationship is no different. I know people have a problem seeing that, like a business, you provide a service that's going to provide satisfaction and fulfillment for your customers. I don't care what the satisfaction is. The same thing for a relationship. When you invite someone into your life, you hire them to provide some level of satisfaction or engagement with you, companionship, whatever it is. And if you're not getting the fulfillment you want, you're going to do just like any customer. You're going to go somewhere else and find it. And if you can't
Absolutely.
Find what you want in your country, the internet makes it easy to go find it from another place. You find it in another country. And I'm saying for relationships, for anything. So instead of women in the U.S. Being upset, find out what it is exactly. If women in other countries are catering to us and we like that, then you all need to find out. Otherwise, you're out of business. You just go file bankruptcy.
Right. Let Enrique say he has some thoughts to say, and I want to add something after that, and then we're going to go to hopefully our last caller for the evening. So go ahead with your comment, Enrique.
Yes, I'll be very brief. But I do agree with, you know, if you don't find what you're looking for immediately, then you're going to go elsewhere. But this is an interesting fact that you'll find in those areas that you're talking about where people are meeting women, is that the domestic abuse is a lot more critical in those areas if you actually look at the men in those areas of those relationships, like the women battered women. You know what I'm saying? That's one thing you'll find consistently in those areas where the women seem to be a little bit more highly educated, but they seem to be a lot more palatable to be a chivalrous relationship. Now,
Okay.
What's going on here, again, what you're saying is that there's a demoralization, a devaluing of relationships that's in the culture. And that's what we are experiencing when we can't find that counterpart that we're looking for as men, and that's why we're going elsewhere. But that's all I have to say as far as my observation on that.
Enrique, wait, just quick to the domestic violence. You know, there's more rape happening now than it has ever. So we talk about domestic violence in other countries. Not only are more women being raped now, we now have an increase of women physically abusing men also, and that we haven't had record numbers like that. So domestic violence is very high in the U.S., but we pretend that other countries have it worse. And for sure, there are more women being raped now than they ever have over the decades. So I don't know why we're pretending that doesn't happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'll say my comment, and then I want to get to our hopefully last caller for the evening. I'll kind of piggyback on what you said, Ted, in that I think until women, and we speak specifically to black women on the show, until black women come to them, you know, get together with themselves and have an honest talk, have a level of self-awareness and say to themselves, you know, there's a reason why we're not being sought after for marriage. There's, you know, you can dress, you know, that old saying, you can dress a pig up and put a tuxedo on it and put lipstick, end of the day, it's still a pig, right? So you can go any sort of direction you want to as to why black women aren't being sought after. The bottom line is that they're not, and they have to look at themselves and say, why has this paradigm shift happened? Why are we now literally at the bottom of the list of, you know, women that men want to marry? And until that happens, black women are just going to go around in circles. I you know, and to Enrique's point, yes, there, you know, if you look at, you know, we speak a lot about going back and kind of going and looking at history and talking about the 50s and 60s. And Enrique is right. You know, not only is there more violence happening now, but there was a lot of more violence happening from black men back then. I'm not going to pull the curtain and not talk about both sides. There were a lot of black men who were very abusive, very much into drugs, selling and using. Very, you know, just very dominant and very aggressive towards their women, had alcohol issues, etc. So I think what has to happen is there's going to have to be coming together.
The drug problem was not in the 50s. That came in the late 60s, the heroin. They dropped.
Yeah, heroin and opium and everything. That came in the 60s. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that was a U.S. thing. LSD, angel dust. All that PC, all that stuff came. That hit the entire nation.
That's true. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, like I said, you know, until our women come together and say to themselves, you know what, we're not being married. That's the end. That's the end result. How can we remedy this? I talked about it on our show last week. Black women are going to have to go to the court systems because black men won't do it because it's going to be looked at and viewed as kind of a hater move. If black men say, you know what, we need to roll back these laws and put, you know, unfair, you know, black women are going to have to come and say, we don't like the laws as currently written up, and we would like to change and amend them to have a level of parity in marriage. Until that kind of stuff, and that's the first thing. Other things are going to have to be, there's going to have to be kind of an understanding and a tweaking of behaviors, philosophies, et cetera, et cetera. So that's part of the reason why a lot of men have opted to go to other countries and seek out international women, because they don't like the laws here, and they also don't like the culture that most of our women are brought up in, where they're extremely disrespectful, and they are. Let's call it what it is. A lot of our women are extremely disrespectful. And so until we start talking about the you know, kind of the elephant in the room and having some sort of solutions, you know, nothing's going anywhere. So that's my thought. So
I'll say the court system is the bad place to look. It's, and I'm going to, this is going to sound negative, men have to grow balls. So if a woman wants to be in a contractual agreement with you called marriage, it's a legal binding contract, you create an addendum to that contract, and that addendum, that you can call it prenuptial, call it whatever you want. But see, here's the problem with a marriage contract. The marriage contract is made by the government, and the government is not good at running businesses. They're not good at creating contracts. So you don't let the government create a contract in your life. You honor, okay, we're going to have a marriage, which means that we have a legal binding contract, except we are going to put an addendum to this contract that reflects our marriage, and we're going to do it while we're in a good state of mind. Otherwise, why would I go into a marriage contract with you if I can't put an addendum? If I can only have it in its blanket, its off-the-shelf form, which is a government form, that's not logical to me. So men are going to have to step up and not depend on the court system. And I know before you said it's not sexy, but it's a mature conversation. If you can't have that conversation, maybe you're not ready for marriage, because marriage is a contract. So we're only talking about an extension to a contract that you claim to want.
Absolutely.
You know, I would say this is Janelle, and, you know, I definitely – you know, what everyone has said definitely resonates, and I'd like to add like a different topic to the discussion, which is that a lot of women in the United States don't show their natural beauty, and they wear you know, fake hair all the time, and I've heard men say that, you know, that's a little much. They don't know the real feel of the women's hair, or they can't get a true, like, you know, the true essence of the woman because they can't see all of them, and that the hair care and quality is a big issue in this country.
It has a bad aroma also. I've heard a lot. Even women who like women have a problem with it. A lot of people don't like it.
Yeah, wow. And too, wow. A lot of women wear the fake hair. It's also unhealthy because it's plastic, and actually there's warning labels on plastic, nylon, and vinyl products that are sold in California. There are warning labels attached to it that it can cause cancer or other defects, defects or whatever. That, yeah, plastic products are bad. And the fake hair, lot of it is fake. I mean, it's plastic. And so it just causes a lot of problems beyond aesthetics, but just, relationships as well.
Wow. Okay, awesome. Thank you for your comment, Janelle. Stay on the line if you can. We are going to go to our next caller, which is from area code 848. 848, you're live and on the air with Straight Talk.
Hey, good. How you doing, Blair, Teddy? This is Teddy's cousin there. But hey, Janelle.
Hey, cousin.
And, all right. I'm just gonna speak from my experience. You know, I was married with my first wife. She was an American, black woman, and my second wife, she's from Trinidad, and she's also black. You know, and I've. You know, I always knew that after the first marriage, I was going to meet somebody from the Caribbean island, you know, but that was my choice. You know, it wasn't like I was searching the internet or anything to say, okay, I need to find a woman from the islands, you know, and, you know, go fly out there. My wife was actually here in America. And, you know, when we met, I think she was here for about a year, and then, you know, she went to school, got the education, became, now she's a nurse. So, you know, I didn't think that it should be, you know, a person's preference, you know, and that's just my preference, you know, that I prefer. I said, okay, I'm going to, you know, I just know I'm going to meet somebody, and she's going to be from the islands, you know. I like that seductive look.
What was it about her as a woman that you think. So you've already been married, and you've had relationships with women from a lot of different places. So
right.
Why didn't you just marry another? Because you've married women from, I'm not married, but you've dated women from other Caribbean islands, Dominican
right.
Republic, Puerto Rico. They're all Caribbean.
Right.
Why was your, what is it about Caribbean women that made, had you prefer them over some women in the U.S.?
Well, I just think, well, I think with the Caribbean women, and, you know, like from my wife, she was loyal, you know, like dedicated, you know. It was like she backed me 100%. It's like ride or die, you know. If I had an idea, she was, and I presented it to her, and she was like, okay, if that's what you really want to do, do it, you know. She wasn't critical, you know, and if it failed, you know, she didn't say, hey, see, you know, you shouldn't have did it or anything. So whatever I wanted to do, she backed me up on it. Where my, you know, the you know, and I'm not saying all American women are this way, you know, because
right.
it all depends. But, you know, the one I was with, she wasn't 100% supportive. You know,
okay.
So if I said, you know, I want to get into a business, and, you know, it's like, well, why would you want to do that? And it's better to work at a job that has a pension or a 9-to-5, you know, and that's not me, you know.
Right.
So I just, and that's just me. Like I said, I prefer to marry somebody that was from the islands, you know. And like you said, I dated different women from the islands, Puerto Rico, Cuba, you know, Cubans, you know. But I didn't go abroad to meet them. They were already
right.
here. And we just, you know, and end up meeting, you know. So that's all I have to say. Got it.
So right. So the you said loyalty. So there was a... you could say a strong value they put on a relationship, which had them be loyal.
Right,
I guess I'm assuming that there's a strong value on family, because they're now loyal, building
yeah.
a family.
Oh, yeah.
And also comfortable with risk-taking.
Right.
That if you want to start a business, fail or succeed, I support you and I don't criticize you.
Right.
I'm loyal.
Right.
I'm loyal to the team, win or lose. We're still a team. Those are
right.
my words, but yeah. Is
right.
that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. Because there was times, I mean, you know, I took a loss, and, you know, my wife had to be the one to carry us, and she didn't complain or anything. She was there. You know, she picked it up. Where, you know, you got some women, oh well, you know, this ain't working, because finance is the biggest part. Problem of a marriage, you know.
Exactly.
If
right.
if you don't have that finance, you know, she's gonna be, you know, either she or he is gonna be stressing, and it's gonna cause friction to the marriage, you know. And I think because when me and my wife met, I didn't have much. I had a used mattress that I got from my brother's house. You know, it was his. He was getting rid of it, so I took it.
Right.
I had a black and white TV, which was a little TV, and I had a portable radio. So when my wife met me, I didn't have much. And not only that, I totaled my car out. You know, I had a new car, and I end up totaling it. So I end up getting a used car, which was like a 73 Volvo station wagon. And let me tell you, when we went out on our first date, you know, we were walking over to the car, but I went to this nice car, and she thought, oh shoot, he's got a nice car. But then I, you know, I was like, hey, that's not the car. And when I went to the Volvo, it was like, wow, we're getting in this thing, you know, where
okay.
I've had I had American woman tell me, you know, had she known that it was going to be a 73 Volvo, we could have took her car. But, you know, for me, that was a turnoff. So it's like,
okay
well,
right.
you don't have to worry about riding in this car anymore. Okay.
Awesome.
So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for your comment. Right. Let me get to our we got a little less than 5 minutes left. Let me get to our last caller for the evening. Looks like another Chicago phone number. It's 347-347. You were live on the air.
Okay. You were.
347 is New York.
Are you there?
Maybe they probably don't have good reception.
Okay. All right. Cool. Okay. So, this was an interesting show.
Blair,
I learned
stuff
on this one.
I remember they used to do these polls of women in the U.S. and they would ask women, what's more important, having a man who's a good lover or having money? And for decades, women always said, I want a good, affectionate, I want a man who's a great lover. Somewhere in the mid-80s, I think it was about 83, is the first time they said the number split. That women were like, I don't care about the good lover. Just show me the money. Give me the money. And I think that number has grown, that women would take the money over having a compatible spouse or a good lover. And what's interesting, we now have more women in the workforce than men, and a lot of women, they do earn good money, but they still are choosing the money over relationships. And so it's part of what happens in the affluent marriages is that they have different values that support the marriage, and that's why money, or even when they lose everything, the affluent people still stay together because it's not money that they're chasing. They have other values that keep them together. And I know I'm like beating that conversation to death, but I think people are missing that. And this is part of what has men look abroad, because they're looking for a value system from a woman that supports building something together.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes,
we can hear you.
You're in
the
comments. It's two things really quick. One,
yes.
I have to disagree that affluent relationships are the answer to the situation. I think there are people who become affluent that do value relationships, but there's a lot of corruption amongst the affluent community, right? That doesn't necessarily make them the standard model. Now, the other thing I want to say is that, again, we're dealing with, why are these women switching from being great lovers, wanting great lovers, to wanting more money? Again, that has a lot to do with what they're watching, listening to, what's being said to them on a daily basis as the solution to life's problems. That's what America is known for. It's known for being a secular nation where values and material things are the answer. And that's not the answer. That's just what the culture is now. We have that value more now with more failing relationships than as opposed to maybe about 50 years ago where people were poor, but they had stronger relationships.
All right. Enrique, we're going to run out of time. So you just said something critical. So you just said there are a lot of women who don't think for themselves, and they let the media force feed them and think for them. That's a reason to not choose that woman by itself.
Enrique?
Yes, I'm here.
All right.
Did you hear what I just said?
All right, Ted.
I was just listening.
Got like 60 seconds, man.
Okay, all right. So that's it. We're at the end of the show. Enrique and everyone who called, Jerry, thanks a lot for your story. Thank you, Janelle, Dwayne. Thank you, Tina Marie and Dawn. Thank you for all the callers. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Love to hear those who are listening and didn't call. Love to hear some things from you. You can go on Facebook with Blair and I, or even comment at the bottom of this as the show. So thank you, everyone. See you next week.
Yay.
Yeah, thanks, everybody, for calling in. And sorry we couldn't get to all the calls and get all the comments, but appreciate all the calls in and everything. So thank you so much, and we'll catch you again next week. Have a great week, everyone.
All right, everyone, take care. Goodbye.
Good night.